Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com. Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Mobile hunters, are you looking to make the move to saddle hunting this year? Or maybe you just want to add a few new pieces of gear or upgrade your current saddle gear? If that's the case, then head over to TetheredNation.com where they've got all mobile hunters covered. Whether you're new to saddle hunting or an old timer, Tethered is your one-stop saddle shop. From saddles to ropes, sticks, ascenders, whatever it is you need, they have you covered. I've personally been using their gear for the past three seasons now. My base setup consists of the Phantom saddle and the Predator platform. And if you're wondering why I've chosen to use their gear above all else, here's the cliff notes. They're innovative and pushing the mobile hunting forward overall. They cut no corners and prioritize the safety and performance of their gear. They care about the community that they've created, and their gear allows me to hunt free. And above all else, I like to support good people doing good work. If you're interested in upping your mobile hunting game, then head to TetheredNation.com. This podcast is brought to you by Skull Brew Coffee Company. Skull Brew Coffee roasts premium single origin coffee, guaranteeing to deliver the freshest coffee directly to your doorstep. The kicker? They're 2% for conservation certified and donate 10% of their proceeds back to organizations who support the interests of our hunting community. So go to skullbrewcoffee.com and pick up one of their three killer roasts and fuel your hunt and fill more tags with Skull Brew Coffee. Welcome to the Truth from the Stand Deer Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Skull Brew Coffee Company. I'm your host, Clint Campbell, and you're listening to episode number 246. Today, we're rolling into part number three of the listener Q&A question with Greg Litzinger, so stay tuned. Is up, everyone. Happy Wednesday to you. Hope you are doing well. Hope you are feeling fine. Before we get started today, just want to give a shout out. Hope everyone out there that was affected by the hurricane and the subsequent storms that kind of rolled up through the south and then up through the, I guess, the eastern seaboard here. I hope everyone is faring okay. For those of you that aren't, hope everything gets back to normal for you guys soon. We had a bit of a ripper here in Pennsylvania. We actually had some decent sized tornadoes touch down that just kind of, you know, lack of a better way to put it, destroyed some areas that aren't too far from where I live. Had one touchdown not too far away. A bunch of big trees kind of blew through my neighbor's yards and stuff. We were lucky where, you know, it seemed like our little house here, our little piece of property, was one of the only that didn't have, you know, a bunch of trees blown down. Fortunately, my direct neighbors didn't have any significant property damage. But man, I drove to visit some family this over the holiday weekend, and had to pass through an area that's close to us. That's actually where we used to live before we bought our house. That was just, you know, they had a pretty sizable tornado touchdown and just destroy a bunch of stuff. So just want to give a shout out to those folks and hope everyone is doing okay. Hope their loved ones are safe. But with that, we'll turn our attention to deer. You know, this weekend, holiday weekend, always a good time to get out and do some shooting, kind of put the final touches on things. I did the camera check last weekend, so we're all good there. We're just kind of pushing ahead to getting ready for the opener here, which I will be kicking off on September 18th here locally. So I'm pumped for that. But went back to visit some family, so I had a little bit more room to stretch out. And it was nice because I was actually able to climb a tree, you know, get the hunting height, you know, hop up in the saddle, shoot the bow a little bit. And it's always good to make some dry runs, not just shooting. Like this past weekend, I actually took all my gear and set up like I was going to do a hunt. And I made a couple climbs in a couple different trees, you know, use a two stick method, you know, for some climbs, used a one stick for some, just to kind of get all the kinks kind of worked out, you know, start to feel like I remember what the hell I'm doing again when I get into the timber and get to a tree, set up the hunting height, literally set up all my camera gear, camera arm, camera, you know, bow, everything that I would take with me for a hunt, bino harness, you know, the whole get up essentially, basically just a dry run, and got up into a tree and set a target out at different distances and just started ripping arrows just to get some elevated practice in. I get a little bit of saddle practice in at my house, but it's really just close to the ground. It's more just to kind of feel, you know, the platform beneath my feet and, you know, remember how to pivot and just kind of have all those muscle memory things kind of come back to me. But it's always nice to get the height so you can kind of, you know, whenever you're up off the ground, you know, 15, 20, 22 feet, whatever it is, you know, it just always feels a little bit different than being, you know, 2 to 3 feet off the ground. You know that height is that height difference is there. And so you maybe act just a little bit differently and you got to get used to your gear again and trust your gear. So that's what I was doing this weekend. And then also, you know, because I was back visiting family out in the country, out in the middle of nowhere, I was able to set up my target and kind of shoot, you know, further distance. And I've been shooting those Afflictor broadheads that I had mentioned previously, the K2 fixeds. And, you know, I've been able to stretch it out here at the house to around 50, 52-ish yards. But back home, I was able to kind of really let some rip out to like 72-ish yards, I think was the furthest that I was shooting. And, you know, like I've said, like I've had plenty of broadheads that I've shot in the past that have performed well, that 30 to 40 yard range. And then after that, you start to get a little bit of weirdness. But these, man, they land right with my field points, you know, so I'm thoroughly impressed with those. You know, I'm shooting the K2 125s is actually what I'm shooting. They've got a bunch of different hybrid models and stuff like that. But if you're interested in checking those out, you can use the promo code truth10 at afflictorbroadheads.com or afflictor.com rather. And, check those out, save you some cash on some broadheads. But yeah, that was pretty much my weekend. You know, nothing too crazy. We're just going to kind of get settled in and get ready for deer season. I've had some buddies actually drop some deer recently, so that's exciting. It's always good when you start to get some of those text messages that people are starting to fill some tags already. I'm super stoked for those people, going to be honest. Also just a little bit envious. But with that, we'll go ahead and get ready to jump into today's show. Before I do that, just two quick things. If you haven't picked up any coffee for your hunting trips yet, don't use shitty coffee, that instant crap. Don't let that give you the rot gut and ruin a hunt. Head over to skullbrewcoffee.com. Pick up the pour over travel packs. You will thank me later. You can use the promo code TFTS21 and save yourself some cash there. And what would make hunting camp even more dope than it just being a hunting camp is to rock some Truth From The Stand merch. You can do that at thetruthfromthestand.com or on my Instagram channel. You can pick up some merch there, sweatshirts, t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, whatever it is that you like. Use the promo code TFTS21 and get yourself some savings there as well. Have a cool show for you guys today. This is part number 3. Like I'd mentioned previously, Greg Litzinger and I did the listener Q&A session. It went on for hours, so we're just kind of breaking this up into some digestible pieces. This is part number 3 of this session. And what we're covering in this one is some early season hill country hunting, which is very applicable to now, you know, some self-filming kind of do's and don'ts, if you will. You know, Greg has been self-filming for quite a while. I've kind of dabbled here and there. So we've got some tips for you there, or just some things that we're doing, and maybe how to get started if you're considering it, but you're not quite sure what gear you might want to pick up. And then we do a good bit about wind and thermals and tree setups. And then we talk a little bit about what our essential gear is when we're heading into the timber. So with that, if your hunting season has kicked off, I hope it's a killer one so far. I hope you're filling tags. If not, I hope you're at least seeing deer and formulating a plan to have success this year. For those of us that are still waiting, just hold on a little bit longer. It's almost here. And as always, I'd like to thank you all for listening. All right, so that one's that. The next one is this one. Actually, I think you should take first because... Well, because I think you have a good answer for it. It's hunting early season hill country. So this person is talking like early September, which I don't know where it's hill country that comes in early September, but
I mean, Jersey, some spots I hunt there, they start late, not till the end of September. I guess, you know, earliest that I've hunted it is end of September.
Yeah.
You know, more mountains. Mountainous, I guess. Mm-hmm. More steeper hills, I guess. Not right. Rolling hills, more steep.
Right.
And it's pretty much was, I would hunt them to set some cameras, camp, and, mm-hmm. you know, just get away, you know, for a couple of days. And pretty much trying to focus on finding food.
Right.
Using the terrain, you know, start at like a deep cut in the morning and just kind of just work my way down. And mm-hmm. so I found, you know, some good cross trails and set up.
Right.
But yeah, early season hill country, I don't really know how to answer that.
Right.
I mean, with good actual, it's like, hey, that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think anything early season, just generally speaking, is like,
their bed to food.
Yeah, you can still get that bed to food. So, you know, find where their bed is, find where their food is.
And I guess, I mean, I would know where some bucks would bed. You know, I did a lot of scouting in the mountains. So I would definitely hunt within, you know, 100 yards of their bed, mm-hmm. you know, almost, which is far for me, you know, hunt right. 100 yards from a bed. But I would, you know, for me, hunting 100 yards from a bed or a known bedding point, if nothing comes in by 8 o'clock, then it gives me the ability to, you know, move on down to somewhere right. else, you know, and scout my way down for either an afternoon or evening sit.
Right. Yeah. I think that classic bed to food kind of pattern. I think the Dan Enfalt top third kind of starts to play, yeah. you know, a role here, unless it's an area that's going to get a lot of pressure, right? Bottoms are hard to hunt, but you know, I know, you know, you'll see deer bed in those bottoms if they're getting a lot of pressure yeah. from the top. I think it's also, where's your access yes. that time of year, right? If all your access is up top, right?
And then the deer bed low.
Right, exactly. So it's there's never one kind of, and that's the cool thing about bow hunting, is there's never one kind of answer. There's some guardrails that yeah. you can use to narrow down.
Guardrails.
But, you know, you kind of have to take into consideration, like, what your specific setup is, right? But early September, if it's me, truthfully, depending on where you're at, it's like, if I can find an agricultural field somewhere that is adjacent to public and it's not being, it's just say it's not getting completely piss pounded yeah. by other hunters, which yeah. it probably is, but for the sake of argument, like, I'm going to focus on where they're going to go there. Yeah. Like, that's ultimately where they want to get to, where they're going to bed. Okay. Like, well, how are they going to get there?
Yeah. If there's ag in the hill country, which a lot of hill country, there is some ag, especially mm-hmm. here on the East Coast.
Yep.
A lot of hill country has some ag. We were scouting a couple weeks ago, actually right by my job in Delaware, a lot of beans.
Mm-hmm.
And it was surprising how many deer were out.
I saw a bunch out whenever I was driving here.
Yeah, we're out at midday. And, mm-hmm. you know, and this is pretty populated. Northern part of Delaware is pretty populated.
Yeah.
And, you know, we ran across a nice buck, a couple nice bucks. And I was like, oh, all right, because I'm going to try and shoot one of them. The best part is, like, right by my job. So it's like, win-win.
Right, sweet.
Leave work, go shoot a buck, and then go home.
Go. Nice. All right, this next one is about filming. So this one is self-filming bow hunts. It it's cost them a few bucks. Are you fellas packing a camera?
I got a lot of hunts on YouTube, good ones. Was a big self-filmer until the camera cost me too many good deer.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have any issues filming. Never had an issue. I doze, bucks, always boom, boom, boom. Center frame, kill, looks great. $200 camera. And I upgraded to a better camera, put the microphone, all that stuff on. And I don't know what it was. It was like, jinxed myself. But that camera setup just cost me so many good deer. Like, I should have 3 or 4, you know, big deer on my wall that mm-hmm. I don't. So I'm like, yep, this, I'm out. But I'm getting back into it now this year. I feel like I need to, you know. Like, my hunts are from a long time ago, you know, 10 years ago. I think the one I was from, you know, it's a good clip. I'm good at it, right. So I want to get back into it. Like, I know, anticipate deer movement. You know, like, right. like, all right, I know that deer's on this trail. You know, outside of the rut, it's October. It's great because you know what they're going to be doing.
Right, like, right.
He's coming in here. I'm put the camera here, and I'm going to make, you know, the shot happen in center frame.
Right.
You know? So I will definitely be filming more this year.
Yeah, I was filming for a little bit. Haven't put anything out. It cost me that big deer in Iowa that
I was trying to mess with the camera instead of watching him and trying to get a shot, and that screwed me up. It was the first time I missed him, so it wasn't like the only reason I didn't kill him. I missed him a couple times. But that was the first miss where I probably would have had the best opportunity was that. But yeah, I'll be filming this year. I always struggled with, I never had a camera arm that I liked. And so that would always be the thing that kind of like, that would, I won't say screwed things up, but I just never got comfortable with. Like, I never had a camera arm that I liked, so then I never had a fluid head that I liked. And it just always became like a pain in the ass to set it up, to tear it down, to use it. Like, it just, and so this past season, I ended up picking up the Lone Wolf Custom Gear camera arm. And I mean, I don't do any work with Cody and those guys or whatever. I bought it. I paid retail.
It's sucker.
Sucker kind of, right. It's a killer arm. Yeah. Like it's the reason why I'll film again this year, every hunt.
I'm actually going to buy from your recommendation. I'm going to buy one.
Yeah. It's super rock solid. It's the best camera arm, like I won't say DIY, but best like self filmer camera arm that I've ever used.
I got the original Lone Wolf arm.
Yeah.
It's a nice arm. It's just big and heavy. Like, I have a small camera, you know, not much bigger than this, you know, my cell phone. It's like, that arm's just way too big. But at the time, that's all there was, really.
Yeah.
15 years ago, there wasn't many camera arm options on the market. So you're like, here, take this giant Muddy or this not so giant Lone Wolf arm.
Right.
And that was it.
Yeah. And this thing is killer. I even take the second, I take a section out of it. So I only use two sections. I don't think you need the third necessarily. I've got a relatively cheap fluid head that I bought for $25. Cause look, this is all YouTube stuff, man. And that's what I try to tell people. It's like, you know, I know some folks that'll pack in, you know, a Muddy arm.
If that's what your goal is to take it to that level, then you're going to have to pack in more weight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're like mine, you know,
even like YouTube stuff, man, it's like, I'm looking at like stuff that people are doing on YouTube and like the quality you're able to get, you know, like for example, like the Hunting Public guys, right? They do a lot of freehand, like where they're on the ground, just holding the camera and there's some shake. Like it's okay. Like get a camera that has decent stabilization in it to get rid of some of that minute shake. And I will tell you this, like that Lone Wolf camera arm, you're not going to get a ton of shake out of it. And it's going to be comparable to anything you're going to see on YouTube. Now, if you're trying to do next level, like Heartland Bowhunter stuff, super cinematic. Well, those dudes are using like, you know,
they have a dedicated camera guy.
Well, they're using cinematic cameras too. Like they're using shit like, you know, like a Sony Red, or they're using like, if it's a lower tier one, they're using like a Blackmagic camera where they're shooting in 6K, like high frame rates and stuff like that, that they can get all that cinematic slow motion stuff. Like, so it's like, unless you're doing that, you'll be cool with like something like a Lone Wolf Custom Gear camera arm. Cause I'm literally running that like a Sony AX53, which is just like a 4K video camera with stabilization, and then one GoPro. That's it. You know what I mean? That's the setup. You know, it's two angles. Everything's in 4K. Do what you said, which is I find where I think I'm going to shoot. Yeah. I put the camera there. I put it wide frame because in post, if I'm shooting in 4K, I can go in four times and not degrade quality. Right. So I can zoom in if I need to for the shot. And I tell myself before the hunt, when I set that up, that I'm killing the deer, even if it's not in frame. Like if I set it up and I don't have time.
That was my problem. Cause I was like, if it's not in frame, I'm not shooting it.
Yeah. Mine is like, if I can get it in frame, cool. If not, I'll get the recovery.
I had a buck that you just seen his feet. It was like the beginning of the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I never posted. I actually deleted all of it. It was a good, like I did the whole recovery and all that other stuff. And if it's not for me, if it's not in center frame or close center frame, I'll never put it up.
No.
I just, for me personally, that's just my own personal take.
Right.
If you're doing it, you know, if I got to put it out there, I said I don't have the best gear, so I need to make sure I have the best out of whatever little, you know,
best footage.
Yeah, $300 camera. That deer needs to be a center frame. There needs to be, you know, something about it. And I don't, like a lot of my stuff, I don't zoom in, you know. I keep a super wide angle, as wide as it can almost possibly go.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that one buck I killed in the mountains, first mountain buck, he was like 30 yards or whatever. And you can see him, but I mean, I was pretty much, he was all over the place. So I'm like, I'm zooming damn near all the way out. I'm like, I'm just going to roll the dice, you know?
Right.
Because he's over here eating acorns all over the place. I'm like, just sit still, please. Like, just sit still.
Right. Let me kill you.
Yeah, because ain't nothing worse when somebody zooms in and they move it.
Yeah.
And it's all herky-jerky. And it's like, come on, man. Like, zoom out a little bit. It's okay. Like, zoom out. Yeah. Bring it out.
The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911, and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Well, that, and you can do a lot of that stuff in post, too. Zoom out, and then you can kind of pan, like, yeah, in post and stuff like that. And get
that's even above my pay grade.
Yeah. All right, so that's what we're doing. That's what we're doing there for filming. The next quesh is how to set stand locations or just hunting locations based on wind and thermals. That's pretty broad.
Yeah, understand your thermals and how they move or could move.
Yeah, I would say the one thing, you know, we won't take a lot of time necessarily on this one because this is a question. It's kind of, you know, it's very circumstantial, like wherever you're at. And
if you're super steep, it's one answer, and swamp is requires a different answer.
Right. So to your point, it's, you know, pay attention to your wind and thermals, right? Understand what your thermals are going to do, what they're going to do at different times of the day. The most important thing here, I think, would be, you know, and this was something that played out for me on that Iowa trip whenever I killed that deer, was I actually set up that day, not for what the wind was doing whenever I went in to set it up. I set it up by watching what the wind was going to do throughout the day and the wind I needed when I thought that deer was going to be there.
Yep.
And so it's not, oh, the wind is a north wind today or right now, but I really need like a northeast wind. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like, well, if it's going to be north all day, then don't hunt it, you know? Or if it's going to switch north to northeast throughout the day and say it's an evening spot, you know, it's a good evening spot and it's going to be, you know, north all day and it's going to slightly start to move around like noon. And by the time it gets to 3 o'clock, it's going to be northeast. Well, yeah, like then I want to hunt that spot. Mm-hmm. Even though the wind is slightly wrong at noon, I'm going to get in there. I'm going to set up for the wind that I need to have when I think I'm going to have a chance to kill that deer.
And I always tell people, don't hunt the wind that's good for you, hunt the wind that's good for the deer.
Set the stand up to where you're giving it up a little bit.
Yeah. You know, and I've set a lot of stands up, especially in the evening in the salt marsh, 100% rely on thermals. Mm-hmm. I've been burned a lot of times.
Well, that's the other thing,
because
too.
Because it's like, okay, it's going to, there's no wind. And usually when there's no wind, there are very light wind, you know, the thermal pool is going to just go this way. And you get in there, it's like,
it's going to go toward the water, right?
Yeah, it's going to just disappear, you know, away from where the deer is going to be. And you get in there, like, there's no wind. You pull out the couple of milkweed, it's perfect. All of a sudden, the wind kicks up, and it's blowing, like, perfect for the deer, awful for me, and the wind picks up. And it's like, well, this place sucks now.
Yeah.
Because my scent alert just blew right to the deer. But, you know, the weather report was, like, no wind, you know? So you're like, okay, when no wind, that thermal pool is going to be money. Or a light wind, the thermals will overtake the light wind. You got a giant mud flat out there that's been baking in the sun, you know,
right,
for an hour. So it's like, it's going to just pull all that down.
Yeah.
And the wind's like, up yours, buddy.
Yeah. I mean, that was the one thing that hunt in Iowa, and I've detailed this in a video and I've talked about this on the podcast, so I won't belabor it and
bore you with the details.
Yeah. I won't get into the details, but that was literally how I killed him. Cause the wind was shifting throughout the day. I don't remember exactly what it was that I needed. I needed something that was like a, like just say like a southeast or whatever. And I had like a straight south most of the day. You know what I mean? I needed it just a little bit and it was actually blowing right toward the deer, but I was set up along the edge of a draw. And as the sun was starting to go down, the thermals were starting to pull my wind just a little bit to where he was getting a northeast, or I'm sorry, he was getting a southeast wind that he needed. But I was actually getting kind of like a straight south wind because my thermal was pulling me just a little bit to like where I was running almost parallel to where he, how he was going to walk in. You know what I mean? So that's an instance where it's like the wind was completely wrong for me, but with the thermal pool, it was actually helping me out and giving me just enough
thermals,
room.
I mean, Dan's a big thermal guy. Dan Infault, big thermal guy. And I hunted with a lot of good guys, you know, in my early 20s in the gun club, and this old timer, always, you know, he was 60, probably mid 60s, deer live and die by the thermals. I don't know what that meant back then. I was like, what the fuck's a thermal? Don't know. You know, right. I'm hunting the wind. I don't know what a thermal was, you know. But as I've gotten older, it's like, he's right.
Yeah.
You know, big deer live and die by the thermals.
Yeah.
You know, we've killed a lot of deer, I've killed a lot of deer using thermals, and I've been busted.
Oh, yeah.
By the thermals a lot of times, so.
Yeah. We'll keep with the wind and thermal kind of theme here, and I'm curious what your answer will be to this one. But this fella's asking kind of like how to access and play the wind in the bull type of a terrain.
Bulls?
Yeah, to get in the bottom without getting busted. I would say, one, the bottom's a bad move just in general. The wind is just fickle down there in general, right? Unless you have pressure up toward the top of the bull and mm-hmm. you know you can't hunt that, then I would stay out of the bottom as much as I could.
Every time I hunted the bottom in Jersey and even like Kentucky, always had problems.
Yeah.
But now PA, up by where Johnny's is, all the deer are in the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to go after them, which mm-hmm. to me is like, this is just insane. This makes no sense. The wind's constantly shifting. These deer just adapted to it. It's like they smell you, and then 3 seconds later, it's coming from somewhere else.
Right.
So they can't really pinpoint you. They know there's danger there, but they'll just be super cautious, super slow coming in there, you know?
Right.
I've had, my milkweed just hitting a doe in the face 2 years ago. I mean, it's just like going off her, and I'm like, she's going to blow any minute now. You know, and I had a buck run by a few, I'm like, blow. Just bring them back here. It's like a calling card. Like, go ahead. You know, she's an older doe with a bunch of other, like, yearlings and fawns. I'm like, do it. Do it. You know you want to.
Right.
She didn't do it because wind's going like this, and all of a sudden it was like, this way. You know, I'm watching all the stuff go this way. So this way. So they were just, like, super cautious when they move. All of them just, like, looking around, just being super cautious.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting because, like, one of the places in an area that I've been scouting this off season, it's actually a bull setup. Yeah. And I actually didn't even notice it until I started getting some trail camera pictures from it and was like, okay, I need to hunt this. How would I hunt it? And I started looking and I kind of started figuring out where I would set up. And it's a bull feature. It's not super steep, you know, but I started kind of thinking through this kind of thinking, like, I'm probably going to start toward the top, you know, and maybe have a hunt there. And this would be an instance where I probably would be a little bit more patient and just kind of, especially because I've never hunted there before, and just kind of observe and see, like, what's the wind going to do here? I got no clue. Maybe I could get away with a little bit more in the bottom than I thought. Yep. You know, it's like, and just try to piecemeal my way through it.
Yeah, and each bowl setup is different. You know, is it facing the sun? Is it in the shade all day? There's a lot of variables.
Well, even just which way is the ridge face? Yep. Or like, you know what I mean? Like, is it south facing? Is it north facing?
Does that bowl get blasted with the sun all day? Is there rocks nearby? You know, is there, you know, a bluff or pine trees that's going to just deviate flow, which makes it even, you know, because some, like you said, some of the spots I hunt in PA, it's just, you can actually hunt them because the wind's actually down low. It's a little more consistent, you know, because it's just going just down. It's more, all right, it's just going down.
Right.
You know, there's not a lot of swirling. I've also hunted some bowls, and you throw out the milkweed, and it's like, there it goes. And a few minutes later, it's like, hey, where'd you come from?
I know. It's always like, and then you kind of sit there and you wonder, what the hell am I doing here? Like, because my scent just like made a
as big, long as your scent's up high and not dropping, it's not that bad of a deal. You
right.
know?
And that's why I would probably start up high and try to figure out, like, is there a sweet spot for where I can set up to where I can be, like, wherever the action is.
Bell hunts, like, he hunts the bottoms a lot.
Does
he? Like, yeah. Scrapes and stuff like that. He's,
that's crazy because so much of that time that signs made it at night in a lot of instances.
And he's got bottoms. Like good daytime intel. Somebody's, I guess, you know, a million acres of woods is different than some of the spots we hunt.
Right. I mean, the thing is too, and that's why this one area where I'm talking about, I'm wondering how much I can get away with because of that, you know? Because most everywhere I've ever hunted, if you found sign in the bottom, it was most likely made at night. Now, there's been some places in Ohio that I've hunted where it was somewhat the inverse, where it was actually the tops were like typically where most of the nighttime sign and activity was taking place. Yeah. And it's just the easiest path of resistance, right? It's like a lot of times where the logging roads are at and stuff like that to log some of these, you know, spine backs out and shit. So, All right, this next question is summer scouting best spent in known areas or finding new areas?
Both.
Yeah.
I put a video out the other day about summertime scouting for, you know, swamp buck beds. Mm-hmm. I know these bucks aren't going to be in the mosquito infested swamps, and so I can go in there and actually spend a little bit more time. And with the vegetation, you know, I found these last couple of years I've been doing it, I've been finding things I missed in the winter. Mm-hmm. You know, in the winter, you just kind of just go through. There's no briars. Like, it's just, I just go this way. It's flat. It's not much, zero topography. So it's like, I'm just walking. And it's like, all right, I'm just going to just walk this way. Mm-hmm. But now it's all the vegetation's grown up. Like, I have to go around stuff, go here, because there's a wall of briars that stopped me from going this direction. Right. I mean, I got a couple tracks where it shows me walking in February right through the swamp. It was all frozen, go right through it. Now I can't walk through it. There's briars this way, and it's full of water. And it's like, all right, I got to go this way. And it's like, oh, shit, there's a buck bed. Oh, I walk by that thing like 30 yards, like three times. Right. And it's an amazing buck bed. You're like, yeah. I literally walk by this thing. But the vegetation's like, nope, you have to go this way. And it's like, I come through, and it's like, oh, look at it. It's like, wow, it's a beautiful buck bed. And you're like, this is amazing. I was like,
would have never seen it otherwise.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm always torn with this question. I actually debated Tony Peterson about this on one of the podcasts we did. Cause I'll just be honest. I hate scouting in the summer. Like, I hate it. Like, it's hot. It's buggy. I just don't like it, you know? So I try to get all my stuff done in advance, and I try to just have the summer be putting out trail cameras, and I'm going in on like missions of like, put out trail camera, leave it alone, go back in, check it, and that's it. And I'm just making those types of trips in. But I will say that I typically will use the summer to kind of re-look at areas that I'm familiar with to a degree. I don't do a lot of exploration of new places in the summer, only because, like, going back to what we talked about, being a family guy, yeah. I got to prioritize the time I'm spending doing stuff, right? And so if I'm going to scout a new place, I want to learn as much as I can about it. And yes, I need to know some of the vegetation stuff you're talking about for access and things like that. Those things I can partially figure out if I'm hunting it, if I need to or whatever, especially if I don't know a lot about it. I'm going to freelance it because I'm going to go in the daylight anyway. But I need to get as much bang for my buck as I possibly can. So I'm spending that time in this winter and spring so I can know where deer are spending time, where they're laying down sign. Like, and I don't know exactly when that is.
Spending time laying down sign.
Oh, you like that? Yeah, it should be a t-shirt. Yeah. Someone out there with design skills, send me a design that's spending time laying down sign with like a big buck on it. We'll make a t-shirt. So with that, it's like a lot of times it'll be things that I'm already familiar with that I'm just kind of going out assessing, mainly access. Like, can I get in this way to an area, right? And it's like, and I'll hike it to see if I can get in, and I'll look for sign like as I'm going through. But as you know, it's like scrapes you can't really see. You might find a licking branch if you're really, really paying attention, but those are hard to pick out when everything's greened up. Like, you'll stumble into them once in a while. So a lot of times I'm using summer just to kind of take a walk through some places I know I'm going to probably hunt this coming year. And it's a large part of the time it's around hanging trail cameras, because I'll just use that time while I'm here. I'm going to explore a little bit, you know, or I might have know this area and I've hunted this area, but I've not really checked out stuff that's 200 yards over this way. So I'm going to hang a camera, and on my way out, I'm going to swing through 200 yards to my east and check out some stuff over here. Yeah. And so I'm hanging trail cameras and scouting, but I'm really kind of just visiting places I'm somewhat familiar with and trying to just learn it more deeply.
Yeah.
My spring and like winter scouting is to like learn what the deer are doing. Yeah. That's like actually going to help me like get on deer. The summer stuff is really just mapping access and learning more about a property I'm already familiar with, like the nuances of it, if that makes sense.
They said back to the relationship, because, you know, we had a lot going on this year. So my winter scouting sessions were short, you know, 4 hours. Like, I'm home by 12:30, you know?
Yeah.
So I've been using the summer months now these last 2 years to, you know, get more time in the woods. And some of the sign I've been finding is it's a lot a lot of beds, which, like I said, with the vegetation, stuff like that. So I've been, I'll probably be doing it more. I'd like to do some more mountain scouting, you know, PA, I just, the time thing. So,
well, yeah. I mean, it's hard. It's the same reason why I haven't been to Kansas. Yeah. I mean, it's a 20-hour drive to try to get out there, or the one spot in Ohio or West Virginia. It's just like, it's a 9-hour drive for me, which is why I went north this year and stayed in PA, because big country, you know, it's closer to home. It's still a 2-hour drive for me, roughly, or a little bit better, but you know, I can do that and be close enough to home to where it feels like I went and traveled a little bit, but I'm not, I can be home pretty quickly.
Focus on the scouting too while you're there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I summertime scouting is, you know, 10 years ago, I'd tell you to fuck off. Now it's like, I feel like I need to do it just to get, I used to shoot for so many miles or time.
I used to,
you know, and it's like, I feel like the summer scouting gives me that edge I need. Cause you know, when I first got married, I hardcore scouted, and then summertime to shoot my bow, not really doing much. And you could see the deer, like there was a dry spell where I didn't really kill anything, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I can get more time in the woods, you know? It's like,
I've been slowly. What you just said right there is perfect, right? It's like, I think whoever sent this question, appreciate you sending it. Awesome question. Cause it's always debated, right? But I think the question is faulty in the question itself, because what you just said is really the correct answer. It's spending as much time in the woods as you can.
Yeah.
And the point being, regardless of the time of year,
right?
The more time you can be in the timber, the better off you're going to be when it comes time to try to, to try to lay,
like
lay something on the ground.
Yeah, I wouldn't be walking edge of bean fields right now.
No.
You know, like my summertime scouting is I'm going looking for October bedding or something I marked. Like, this is great in-season bedding. Right. Well, they're not bedding there now. So it's like I have a free range of their bedding right now, just like in February, in March.
Yeah, because there's plenty of time now where you're not.
And even like February and March, like I know I'm bumping somebody's deer out, somebody's bucks out, but now I ain't bumping them out.
Yeah.
And I got foliage. I'm like, okay, I mean, October, it's going to look pretty much just like this, except brown. So I'm like, well, that tree will be great for early season. But once these leaves die, I stick out like a sore thumb. But that tree over there, okay, that's my tree come, you know, mid-November.
And that's one thing that you do that you're a killer at that I noticed the last time we scouted together and quickly recognized it's something I need to get better at. Like, I'm okay at picking out trees, and I usually have cover, and I'm usually okay. But your ability to pick out a tree quickly and know just exactly what you said, like, this one's going to be good for this time frame, this one's going to be good for this time frame, and you usually will have a couple trees picked out in each area that you can hunt.
Because I always say I'm going to come back. Like, I used to always go back. I'd mark it, I'm coming back, and I would. Now it's like, I ain't coming back. I ain't got time to come back. So it's like, boom, 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 mark. And I take, now, you know, I take a picture, you know, and all that stuff. So all that stuff's marked. So if you do get turned around in the dark, you're like, wait, was it an oak tree or was it a pine? You're like,
that's an oak. Pictures?
Yep.
There you go.
There's that oak tree.
Yeah.
Because I don't like to, I don't leave eyeshine or anything out. So I'm just sneak in, sneak out like a ninja.
Yeah. So I got to start doing that. That's the one thing I got to start doing is taking pictures and just like saving it. So I know which tree I'm going to get into, you know, cause I'll pick out a tree while I'm scouting. Right. But by the, I don't mark it. Like I'll mark the location. Yeah. Like I want to hunt here. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, but then I'll show up in like October and be like, which tree was that again? Yep. You know what I mean? Trying to find it. But all right, this next question is a little, this fella's switching it up. He's saying, some of your favorite, most essential pieces of gear. That's a tough one. I mean, it's not tough. I mean, I use the same stuff all the time, but
most essential.
Yeah, most essential. Like, let's throw out like the obvious, right? Like, so the obvious is
eyeballs.
Yeah, feet. Yeah, legs. The obvious would be our bows.
Yeah,
our arrows, our saddles. You know, and our sticks.
One of our right? So say the question again now.
What are our favorite / most essential pieces of gear? So maybe we could do it two ways. Maybe we could say our favorite piece of gear, and then maybe we say, because our favorite may not be our most essential.
Yes.
And then what we feel our most essential is.
For me, favorite is going to be digital scouting. 100%. That is I come from an era, like hunting, there was none of this. So people that are just getting hunting now, boy, you don't know how good you got it. It is a great time to be a hunter.
Right.
There are access to everything at your fingertips.
Yep.
And good high quality. I mean, I remember back in the day, we used to print aerial photos out and plat maps out and like try to overlap them and stuff like that. And it's like, okay, I think this is it. And it's just like just shit quality. But we used to just carry it out like, I think that's that spot we marked at. Never the spot we marked, you know. But having access to good aerial photo and topo maps at your fingertips and be able to go from topo, you know, hybrid or just satellite, you know, Onyx base map, Spartan Forge, whatever,
right.
You know, hunt stand, whatever. But
all right. But so what's your most essential then? Like the thing that you can't leave home without.
I'm gonna go with that. That again.
So it's the same.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to have to go the same because having all that information on the fly has killed a lot of deer. You know, it killed a deer in PA last year. You know, Johnny was like, here, pull this up, you know, and we're talking about it. He goes, all right, I was here. And I'm like, I'm going to go here. He goes, great, go right there. And be able to just pick a spot, 8 o'clock at a bar, you know, eating some food, drinking beer, and literally go right to that spot and kill a buck.
Right. Yeah. So I'm going to go with my favorite first. And
snacks.
Snacks. Yeah. No. I think my favorite piece of gear, and this changes, right? Yeah. But for right now, I think my favorite piece of gear is the new Kennetrek boots I got. Oh. Like, they're just, I've worn them all year scouting.
Shameless plug.
Yeah.
Kennetrek, what's up?
I don't work with them at all. Like those, I bought
not yet.
Those.
Anyway.
Actually, if they want to send me some boots, I ain't too proud to take some boots, you know. But no, I'd worn Solomons for a bunch of years and they just would never last a season. They're comfortable as shit. They just won't last a season. Like
I get beat up on tree stands.
Yeah.
And the saddle platforms.
Yeah. That, and like, they would always constantly leak. Yeah. Like I could only get probably, I mean, they wouldn't even make it through scouting season. I wouldn't even get to hunting season. They would already be leaking.
Yeah, mine's both pair of my Solomons, same thing. It's like, how do you not? It's Gore-Tex.
Yeah.
Like, come on. Well,
the membrane just wears out. And like what I've really kind of learned, like without leather, leather's kind of like that first barrier and you can make it.
Well, you can reseal leather.
Well, that you can make it somewhat watertight. Yeah. And so when that membrane starts to wear out, you still have the water sealed, you know, aspect from like your leather or whatever. So I got a pair of hard scrabble Kennetrek boots, which are probably a little stiffer for whitetail hunting. You'd probably be more of a Western boot, but I like my boots kind of stiff because I also don't
like
want my
drinks.
Like my drinks. But I wore them all year hunting or all season scouting in muck, mud, water, didn't leak. Yeah. And they didn't break in as quick as the Solomons, but like they. Yeah.
On them harder.
They're harder, yeah, but they broke in pretty well. I didn't get any blisters or anything like that, and like really like them. Yeah. Like, I'm looking forward to hunting this year in them. I think my essential piece of gear is, and I'm not going, like we said, like we're not going with like bows, saddles, because those are things we're always going to use. My essential piece of gear is the same as yours, which is my digital map.
Yeah.
Like having it on my phone, like.
It's addicting.
It's addicting. It's
awful.
But it's shortened learning curves for properties.
Yeah.
You know, it's just made it easy to find my way to, like, you know, this oak tree or this terrain feature or back to this scrape or, you know, quickly kind of, if nothing else, quickly mark off places where I don't want to be, where I'm not going to go, for whether it's pressure reasons or the terrain just doesn't look good, you know, or what topography doesn't look good, whatever the case is. Like, it has just expedited my learning curve on properties that I'm not familiar with. So it's helps me when I go freestyle a place, because at least I may have not been there.
Yeah.
You know, but at least I can get a sense of like what the terrain is going to look like and what my approach might be, you know, because even if I haven't been there, I will mark a handful of spots where it's like, I think I want to check this out. I think I want to check this out. I think I want to check this out. And I'll start freestyle hunting my way through those places. Now, I often don't make it to all of them because I'll end up finding sign along the way that takes me off course. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to hunt this. And then the hunt changes as the hunt plays out. Like, I just let the woods tell me how I'm going to hunt it. But I at least go in with a plan, you know, and that to me is the most essential thing, because I'll literally make a new plan while I'm in the tree. I'll be like, oh, this sucks.
Yep.
You know, I'm not seeing any deer thought I was going to. It's 10:30. I'm moving. Where am I going?
Let's
go over here.
You know, that, It's just having all that stuff at your fingertips.
Yeah.
And even access to people. You know what I mean? How many times have I called somebody, you know, what do you think of this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're like, go for it. And then like it plays
out. Well, yeah. I mean, I've done that with you where I've sent you a pin and been like, hey, I've got intel of this area. This is what I'm thinking of doing. What do you think? You know, your response is usually kill.
Yeah.
Like that's usually like I get like a one word text back from you during the season. Or if it's bad, you'll tell me, you'll say like, I don't know. What about this? You know, but if it's a good plan, you're like, kill.
Yeah.
You know, so I get the one
short
word.
And sweet. Gotta
that's right. That's right.
Plant that seed.
That's right. So I think we've been rolling here for about 2 hours. I think we'll take a break, take a pee break, come back for another sesh. How do you feel about that?
All right.
All right, folks, that is a wrap for today's show. I'd like to thank all of you for listening. And if you haven't yet, please head over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating. And hell, while you're at it, head over to YouTube and give us a sub there, too. I'd be super appreciative if you'd be able to do those two things for me. And before I shut this thing down, I need to give a big shout out to our partners who continue to help us make this podcast possible. Tethered, Exodus Outdoor Gear, Skull Brew Coffee Company, and Maven Optics. And until next time, we'll see y'all. All right, gang, the new Truth merch is in stock at truthfromthestand.com and on YouTube below any of the Truth from the Stand videos. I've got some new hats, beanies, t-shirts, long sleeve t-shirts, and sweatshirts. There's even a new do hard shit hat for those of us who like to embrace microdosing adversity. So head to truthfromthestand.com and check out the new gear and use the code TRUTH, T-R-U-T-H, and save yourself some cash on the new gear.
In Wild Country, rules were not created by man. Don't miss Wild Country, Wednesdays from 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Primos. Speak the language. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.